If you were with us last week, Jesus had some challenging news for Peter. He told him what his future is going to entail and how it would entail crucifixion. And in the passage this week, we see Peter's reaction to that and the follow-up. So here's how I want to approach this morning. I want to look at Peter's call, Peter's question, and Peter's comfort. Peter's call, Peter's question, and Peter's comfort. So first, Peter's call. You remember that Jesus told Peter that in the future that following him was going to entail suffering and even crucifixion. He says to him in verse 18, "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, Peter, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted, but when you were old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." And then verse 19 says that he said this to show by what kind of death Peter was to glorify God. Peter, the future is going to be hard. You're going to suffer, and that suffering is going to lead to a death. And notice, Jesus doesn't say might. He says, truly, truly. Like, you can take this to the bank. It's not like following me may include some suffering. It's not like this could happen, but we know the chances aren't very well. No, this will happen, Peter. Truly, truly. Notice also, it's not just that it will happen, it's that it's going to happen, and it's not going to happen according to Peter's own choosing. Jesus draws this contrast. When you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. In other words, Peter, this is not a path you would have chosen. But it is the path that I have chosen for you. You know, sometimes God calls us to do really hard things. Sometimes God calls us into really hard places. Sometimes God calls us to walk down paths that we would not have wanted to walk, that we would not have chosen, and that's what following him entails. Sometimes following Jesus means following him into very demanding relationships where you give and give and give and give and you don't get a lot in return. Sometimes following Jesus means that you are called to raise a child who will never be self-sufficient. Sometimes following Jesus means that you are called to love a parent who could never remember your birthday and now they can't remember your name. Sometimes following Jesus means that you will have to abide in an unfulfilling marriage. Sometimes following Jesus means that you will be engaged in areas of ministry with no apparent fruit. Following Jesus can mean singleness, it can mean transience, it can mean poverty, it can mean celibacy, and sometimes it means suffering and dying a premature death. Bo Schroer, in 2021, felt a call to take the gospel of Jesus to a place where people had not known the gospel of Jesus. And so he moved from Minnesota to Angola. He wanted to minister in rural communities there. He moved with his wife and his five children. He wanted to minister in rural communities there, but God had other plans. While they were doing their first year there in an immersive language program and cultural study, they realized that they started to develop these relationships in the urban center, and God gave them a rapport with the people there. They started a ministry. That ministry was reaching out to 300 kids a week, serving them soup. They were inviting them into their homes. Their ministry was so successful that the government actually gave them a plot of land by which they could do more ministry on. That land was next to an orange grove. It was actually kind of dangerous because there were thieves that would come in the middle of the night and they would steal oranges, and it was actually a kind of violent situation. There would be gunfire and things like that throughout the night. They thought about moving to a rural place. They went, but they felt that their hearts were really called back. A week ago, he was killed. Only yesterday or so, his wife was taken into custody. We're not sure why, but it's related to the death. I don't know all the details. Nobody knows all the details. I do know this, that for either of them, this is not what following Jesus, it's not what they would have chosen. It's not what they would have wanted. But sometimes following Jesus means suffering and dying a premature death. That's what it meant for Peter. Verse 19, this he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said, follow me. Well, at that point, Peter turns around, verse 20, and he sees John. John doing exactly what Peter was called to do. It says that John was following them. They're walking down the beach, Peter and Jesus, and John is lagging behind. And this leads to Peter's question. So we've looked at his call. Let's look at his question. And his question is right there in verse 21. When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? What about John? What's going to happen to him? If this is what following you is going to mean for me, what is following you going to mean for him? You know, I think Peter's question, it's our question. Your company is having to downsize, and you find out that you're getting a pay cut, and you want to know, what about them? Are they going to get a pay cut? You're getting laid off. What about them? Are they going to get laid off? We ask these questions all the time. We want to know, why did they have such an easy route to a tenure track job without pushback? How come it was so easy, Lord, for them to have children when it's been so hard for us to have children? What about them? Lord, are they going to have to suffer like we have to suffer? Lord, what about them? How come their marriage seems so fulfilling when mine doesn't? How come their spouse seems to be so successful when mine isn't? How come their kids love them and call on holidays and show up when mine don't and we work so hard? How come their kids are following Jesus when we work so hard and they didn't? How come, Lord, what about them? How come their startup took off so fast when I lost so much money in mine, and I thought you were calling me to do this, Lord? What about them? That's what Peter wants to know. Peter wants to know, what about John? I mean, if I'm going to have to suffer in this way, what kind of suffering is he going to have to go? If this is what following you entails for me, is it going to be equal with him? That's what he's doing. See, why does Peter feel the need to compare? Because I think he wants things to be fair, like we all do. But why? We had some friends in graduate school when we were studying in England, and our friends were actually from this area of the country. They went to undergraduate in Cal Poly, and we didn't know what Cal Poly was at that point. I know, crazy. And we had these friends, they graduated from Cal Poly, and they were over in grad school. And as we were talking to them, somehow the conversation came up about like student debt and where you chose to go to school and this, that, and the other. And as we were talking about these things, think it came up and we were like, well, the reason we chose the schools we chose was because of scholarships. And the wife looks at us and she goes, scholarships? And we're like, yeah, scholarships. And she's like, wait a second. You got scholarships? And we're like, well, yeah, we got these scholarships. And she's like, hold on. Well, are you like some kind of genius or something? And we're like, oh, no, like, we just applied. She's like, how'd you know to apply? We're like, you didn't apply for scholarships? We applied for every scholarship we could, you know? We were like writing the local Chick-fil-A and asking for money. We're like, you know, who, like anyone, everyone, you know, like go to Ralph's. Do you have any scholarships for us? We're just asking. That's what you do. You just apply, you know? You're like, have any scholarships for redheaded people? We're dying. We're a dying breed. Do you have any scholarships? Like, you look for scholarships everywhere. And she's like, what? No. What makes you so special? And isn't that it? Isn't that what we want to know? Isn't that why we compare? Because maybe we're worried that if someone else's life looks better than ours, if they look like they're blessed more than ours, if they look like they have a more important ministry, or if they look like they have a more flourishing family, that maybe, just maybe, they're more special than we are, especially in the eyes of God, in the eyes of Jesus. And maybe we're not as special. So what about him? What about John? You know, John was always getting the best of Peter. Do you know that? John ends up sitting right next to Jesus at the Last Supper. I mean, Peter's so far away, he has to ask John to get Jesus' attention. Who's he talking about? Who's going to betray him? Ask him. It's John that has the social clout to get into Caiaphas's courtyard, and Peter's left outside, but Peter can only get in on John's coattails. And when Jesus had just shown up on the shore, who was it that recognized Jesus first? It was John. I mean, John was always getting the best of Peter. And so Peter wants to know, what about him? Well, look how Jesus responds, verse 22. If it's my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. You know what Jesus does? He doesn't play the game. He doesn't compare John's life with Peter's. He doesn't say, well, you know, Peter, yes, at the end of your life, you're going to have this really excruciating death and you're going to be crucified. But John, he's going to have these other things that happen to him. He's going to get exiled on an island. He's going to be there all by himself. It's going to be really lonely and tired. He's going to be like Tom Hanks talking to Wilson in Castaway. He's going to have these visions and things like that. I mean, it's going to be really bad for him. He's going to lose his sight. He's going to lose his mind. And he's going to be all by himself. And no one's going to be able to take care of him, Peter. And if we weigh them all out, we weigh them all out, it's pretty much equal. Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus does not tell Peter John's story. He doesn't compare them. In C.S. Lewis's fairy tale, A Horse and His Boy, he tells the story about how a little boy named Shasta and his travel companion Erebus go through this long and arduous journey. At the end of that journey, the boy Shasta has this conversation with a voice, a mysterious voice. The mysterious voice is actually going through all the things that have happened and the lions that Shasta has seen along the journey. And Shasta interrupts and he says, yeah, don't you think it was bad luck to meet so many lions? Said Shasta. "There was only one lion," said the voice. "What on earth do you mean? I just told you that there were at least two the first night." "There was only one, but he was swift of foot." "How do you know?" "I was the lion." Shasta gasped with open mouth and said nothing. The voice continued, "I was the lion who forced you to join with Erebus. I was the cat who comforted you among the houses of the dead. I was the lion who drove the jackals from you while you slept. I was the lion who gave the horses the new strength of fear for that last mile so that you should reach King Loon in time. And I was the lion you do not remember who pushed the boat in which you lay, a child near death, so that it came to shore where a man sat wakeful at midnight to receive you." Shasta says, "Then it was you who wounded Erebus." "It was I. But what for?" "Child," said the voice, "I'm telling you your story, not hers. I tell no one any story but his own." The lion named Aslan explains the wounds of Erebus to Erebus later on. He won't tell Shasta about the wounds. He will tell Erebus. He tells her her story, and he says that they are equivalent to the suffering that Erebus has caused to her stepmother's slave girl. And then Erebus asks, "Will this slave suffer more?" Erebus wants to know. Aslan replies, "I am telling you your story, not hers." It's actually a theme in C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia. At the end of The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, Lucy asks whether her cousin Eustace will return to Narnia, and Aslan the lion responds, "Do you really need to know that?" Peter, do you really need to know what's going to happen to John? Peter, I'm not telling you John's story. I'm telling you yours. Jesus is telling Peter his story, not John's, and that's all Peter needs to know. And that's all you and I really need to know either. You know why I think Jesus doesn't tell Peter John's story? Because I don't think it really helps. I mean, think about it. Is it really possible to compare your story with another person's story? Is it really possible to compare your grief with another person's grief, your suffering with another person's suffering, your joys and your triumphs and your blessings with another person's joys and triumphs and blessings? Look, suffering is like a snowflake. Each one is unique. Totally unique. Because each person and their story is completely and totally unique. We often say, you know, they will never know the kind of loss that I have known. Of course. Because you're a unique person, and that was a unique loss, and no one could experience that loss the same way you could, and nothing else is comparable. And yet, in some ways, they're all alike. Because we all live under the curse. The author, Flannery O'Connor, one of my favorite authors, had a pen pal. That pen pal disclosed to her her sexual desires and orientation in a letter. Flannery O'Connor, who was a Catholic writer and very, very, a very committed Catholic, said in response, quote, "I think no different of you. What is true of you in one particular way is true of every one of us in our own particular way. The fall happened to us all. We are all broken, and our brokenness takes many forms. If we surrender to it, it destroys us. If we embrace it as our cross and give it to God, it redeems us. That is what grace is. What was Flannery O'Connor saying in response? She was saying, we all have our crosses to bear. And they're all unique and particular and individual. And yet, we all have them the same because we all live under the curse. For some of you, it's sexual desire and orientation. For some of you, it's food and your relationship with food and body image. For some of you, it's migraines. For others, it's a wayward child. For some of you, it's chronic fatigue. For others, it's failing memory. For some, it's an absent spouse. For others, it's perfectionistic parents. But let me tell you, it is not worth comparing. It's not worth comparing our crosses. It's not worth comparing our marriages. It's not worth comparing our careers. It's not worth comparing our health or relative thereof. I mean, how could we compare children or lack thereof? How could we compare or assess whether or not our spouse has more or less advantage to us than someone else's spouse has more or less advantage to them? How could you compare that? How could you assess whether or not singleness is more of a blessing or burden to you than marriage is a blessing or burden to someone else? How could you assess? On what metric would you use? We can't compare because you are totally unique. In Bob Benson's book, Parental Math, he talks about dropping off his eldest child to college. He says, Wednesday night, Mike slept downstairs in his room where children belong, and we slept upstairs in ours where moms and dads belong. Thursday night, we were 350 miles away. He was in Ramada 325, and we were in 323 in connecting rooms. We left the door open and talked and laughed together. Friday night, he was in the freshman dorm, and we were still in 323. Sunday night, we were home, and he was 323 miles away in Chapman 309. Now, we had been through this before, and we thought we knew how to handle separation pretty well. Somebody said, you still have three at home, three fine kids, and there are still plenty of laughter, plenty of noise, plenty of sport games to go around, plenty of everything, except Mike, Bob Benson says. In parental math, 5 minus 1 just doesn't equal plenty. And then he said, and I was thinking about God. He sure has plenty of children, of artists, plenty of singers, plenty of preachers, plenty of candlestick makers, plenty of everybody except you. Because you are unique. And your story is unique. And all of them together can never take your place. And Peter is unique, and John is unique. Peter's boisterous. He is always the first to speak. John is reserved. He sits back. He's quiet. Peter's always rushing into things. John is always assessing things. Peter is fiery. John is contemplative. They're completely unique people, and Jesus loves them uniquely and completely. He loves them both. Which is what brings us to the comfort. Look at verses 22 and 23 again. Jesus said to Peter, if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. So the saying spread abroad among the brothers that this disciple was not to die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die. But if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? If it is my will. Did you know that Jesus has a will, a desire, a purpose, a plan for each of our lives? And it's actually through walking that plan, that purpose, when he says, follow me, he has a calling on each of our lives. It's through walking that purpose that we can actually glorify him. Verse 19, this he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after this, he said, follow me. Peter, this is the path that I have laid out for you to walk. And this is the path on which you are to glorify me. John has another path. That path is for John to walk. That is the path on which he glorifies me. We all have unique paths. But it's the particular path that we have, that he has given us, on which we are given to glorify him. And that's what the comfort is. See, some of us are called to glorify God in notoriety. Some of us are called to glorify God in anonymity. Some of us in singleness, some of us in marriage, some of us in riches, some of us in poverty, some of us with our minds and how we use our minds in thinking, some of us with our hands and how we use our hands in building, some of us in managing, some of us in ministering, some of us in heartache, and some of us in health. But all of us are called to glorify God on the path on which he has called us. And whatever path he's called you to walk on, that is the path on which you can bring him the most glory. And for Peter, that was in dying a humiliating, premature death. And for John, that was in remaining in isolation until old age, exiled on an island. Listen, Jesus will not evaluate your life on the basis of how well you walk another's path. Jesus will not evaluate my life on the basis of how well I walk another's path. Jesus is not going to evaluate us on how well we fulfill another person's calling. Pablo Picasso said, when I was a child, my mother said to me, if you become a soldier, you'll be a general. If you become a monk, you'll be the pope. I like Picasso's mother. Instead, he said, I became a painter, and I wound up as Picasso, because that was the path on which he was called to walk. Jesus will not evaluate me according to my superiority or inferiority over anyone. No preacher, no church, no ministry, no husband, no father, no son. And when ministers get together, it's a little secret. You go to these conferences and they always ask, you know, how large is your church? And then I feel like this judgment, right? Because like, how does mine evaluate compared to these other people? And they're making more of an impact. And aren't they doing better? And aren't they doing more? And Jesus will not evaluate me on the basis of someone else's call. My place is unique. My time is unique. The calling that he has for me here is unique. And the same is true of you. Jesus is not going to evaluate you on the basis of how well you teach someone else's class, how well you get along with someone else's manager, how well you raise someone else's kids. No. He's called you to your unique, particular situation. And that's where you are to glorify him. He is not going to evaluate how well you stewarded someone else's time and someone else's gifts. There's a path for me to walk. There's a path for you to walk. And there's grace in it. Notice what Jesus reiterates twice. Verse 19, Peter, follow me. And then verse 22, what is that to you, Peter? You follow me. Why? Because on this path, that's where I am. That's where I will meet you. You're not going to find me on somebody else's path. They'll find me on that path, but you will not. No, you follow me, because the path that I'm leading you down, that's the path that you are on. And that's where I will meet you. Peter, I'm going to be with you on the cross just like I'm going to be with John on the island. Peter, I'm going to be with you when you lose your breath, just like I'm going to be with John when he loses his eyesight and his hearing. And Peter, on the cross, you will experience me in ways that you can never imagine, just like John will experience me in ways that he could never imagine when he is called up in the Spirit on the Lord's day and receives a vision. But the most important thing is that I am with you both. That's where you find me, who loves you uniquely and completely. So, if Jesus calls someone else to do some other thing in some other way, what's that to you? What's that to me? Let's follow Jesus. In the name of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.